Welcome to a special episode of Shine On Policycast. My name is Dries Akke from Solar Power Europe. I'm here at the European Parliament, ready to talk about solar and the next European elections. Good afternoon, Mr. Kelly. You are the member of the European Parliament for Ireland for the centrist European People's Party. It's really great that you can join us today for the Shine On Policycast. And let me just start with giving you the floor and tell us a little bit, like, how has it been over the last years? It's been quite a ride working in the European Parliament. What can you tell us about your experience?
Yeah, I've been here now for 3 mandates, 15 years. This was probably the toughest in terms of getting work done. And of course, also because of COVID, it disrupted everything. So you'll find that since COVID, there's a rush to get a lot of legislation done, and that puts a bit of pressure on. But at the same time, I've enjoyed it. I've been involved in a lot of important files, which will impact positively, I think, on European citizens and on climate change as we move forward. And when you can say to yourself that you have worked hard, you fought a battle and won, because all my files were successful, that's very important, then I can say, yes, it has been worthwhile, and I got to know a lot of people. I learned an awful lot. I keep an open mind in things, because nobody knows it all, and particularly politicians with more general knowledge than specific. So listening to people like Solar Europe and all those, you can take from them suggestions and ideas that you can lead into legislation and make life better for people. So yes, I've had a big opportunity to work, particularly influencing the Renewable Energy Directive, the Energy Performance Absolutely. And Buildings Directive, yep. and also on other areas outside of energy in my other committees, be it constitutional affairs, trade, and Brexit, which is panning out nicely now too, but we won't say too much about that for the moment.
Well, Brexit, it's been a while that I heard that word, but it's indeed been quite a ride with multiple crises at different levels, being part of the work that was on the table. But as you mentioned, you've been such an important MEP in many important files for renewables, for the energy transition, and for solar, especially when it comes to, for example, the Buildings Directive. Tell us a little bit about that. What are your main takeaways? What are the main elements you're proud of from landing that file?
And firstly, I couldn't believe when I heard the statistic first, the buildings are responsible for 36% of our emissions and using 40% of fossil fuels. So without addressing the built environment, we were never going to reach our targets. So that's why I opted to look for the file on Energy Performance Buildings Directive. I did the implementation of the last file 2 years ago, and it was without controversy. It sailed through. I thought the same would be the case with the new directive. Oh my God, how wrong I was. It became hugely controversial from the very beginning.
Okay. Yep.
With a lot of people, even in my own group, putting down red lines. Yep. With my colleague, the Green Rapporteur, probably being overambitious and then trying to get everybody on board with a practical solution. Mm. And as I said, a practical solution that enough people will vote for in Parliament. Because the one thing I feared was that you could spend 2 years working on something, it's rejected by Parliament. What did you achieve? Zero. Mm-hmm. I hate that.
Yep.
I like to spend my time profitably. So I really worked hard in my group when they were getting a little bit difficult. I said, give me your red lines and I will work on them. And I delivered them. And even at that, because I think we were coming closer to elections, people began to look at not really the substantive issues of the file, but seeing what people were saying back home. And that was a difficulty as well. But I think we have a majority, and we'll be voting on it in March, and that will then become legislation. And I think we'll unleash a lot of renovating, both solar and others, which will be hugely beneficial to European citizens overall.
Yeah. Because of course the European Buildings Directive is quite important for the solar industry. There is a particular article as well setting a rooftop standard for public buildings, for renovated buildings, and so forward. What is your sense about how that come about? How did we create consensus around that requirements?
It was very difficult, and in a lot of these cases, you leave the most difficult until the last. And then you can focus on it and give it all your energy. Mm-hmm. The rooftop solar initiative was very important. It was mentioned in the RePowerEU, but hadn't been included in legislation.
Yep.
And I think for us, that was hugely important. And I worked hard and got other people on board to make it happen. Mm-hmm. Because rooftops, in many ways, they're high, but they're low-hanging fruit. Because if you put the solar panels up, they're there, and they don't interfere with anybody, and they keep generating electricity. And when you see the amount of electricity that they can generate and reduce bills for people, and then it makes the good feel-good factor as well.
Absolutely. Yep.
I think anybody living in a house with a rooftop solar, every day they can say, the sun shining in my house is creating electricity. Because of that, I'm not causing any emissions. That psychological factor is hugely important.
Indeed, and that's something we talk about a lot as well, like the psychological element of connecting people, citizens, to the bigger energy transition agenda. And solar, especially rooftop solar, can play that role. It connects people to that wider agenda and makes them understand that this is also an agenda for them that benefits them. And I think therefore the rooftop standard is quite an important element of ensuring the democratization and the connection with citizens. And I think these kind of topics will become more important also when we shift to another constituency, like, for example, farmers and the agricultural communities. There, too, we probably need to make sure we tell a good story and we involve them and engage them in the Green Deal agenda.
And that's absolutely crucial. Farmers spend 50% of their costs in electricity.
Yep.
That's huge, in Ireland anyway. So if you can get them to use alternative sources, especially solar, then they're going to reduce their bills massively. Mm-hmm. I mentioned this about 5 years ago, I'd say, at a farmers' conference, and their eyes lit up. And I just said to them, look at all the sheds around here. Mm-hmm. I said, all you have to do is put a solar panel on top of it. Mm. There's no digging, there's no routing, there's no looking for planning permission. And it has taken off since. Mm. So really, I think the question will be having enough solar panels to meet the demands both of the individual householder, but also of farmers. Yep. And farmers will embrace this. And also, of course, you've agro-solar. And a lot of people were complaining that, oh, you're taking productive land out of use. No, you can do the opposite.
Yep.
And that is a message that's only slowly getting through. So I see a huge opportunity, particularly over the next 6 years, because we're only 6 years to 2030, to grow both rooftop solar in agriculture, but also in the land itself. And I think it's going to be wonderful. And especially with innovations improving year in, year out. Yeah. It's going to be more economically viable for people, but also more profitable for them as we move forward.
Absolutely. And you're absolutely right. Like when it comes to agri-solar, so having that opportunity for farmers to also benefit and connect to the energy transition to solar, there's still so much to be explored. Yeah. Policy frameworks do need updating because we do hear about some inconsistencies and some, bottlenecks with respect to farmers engaging in agri-solar and what it means for the common agricultural policy and for the eligibility to actually also benefit from subsidies from there. So there, we need to dig out some of the policy frameworks to make sure that agri-solar gets its place there.
Yes, and I've just come from a meeting with Ursula von der Leyen, the president. We were talking about the next term, hopefully when she's re-elected. And dealing with farmers and ensuring they're on board is going to be hugely important. But showing them that it isn't all about tying them up in red tape and reducing their freedoms, that they have the freedom also to initiate and give them the power to do so. And solar is going to be a big, big factor there, because I've seen it back home in Ireland. They're all asking about it. They all want to engage. And now, as you said, with agri-solar and all the various alternatives, Even I've seen fences with solar panels on them.
Yes.
So the innovation is going to be massive. Can you imagine a farm with seven or eight fields and each of the fences is a solar fence? Mm-hmm. I mean, this is going to be wonderful. And we just need to embrace it, get the message out, and of course, get the supply available. That's going to be a big challenge.
Absolutely. And maybe that was a topic we can actually dig into a little bit more, because of course, the solar sector is booming, but the supply chains are not very diverse. Yeah, for the moment, the dependency on one country is quite obvious. And that is something that you need. There needs to be resilience. There needs to be diversification. So what's your perspective on that? Like, how can we make sure that at least part of the supply chains come back to Europe and are made in Europe?
I think firstly, I would say we're after waking up. We walked into this sleep, and then we found we were totally dependent on China in particular, but other countries possibly also. And now we're saying this is not good enough. So the question of competitiveness is hugely important, because if you're not competitive, you're not at the races. If I'm in charge of a football team and I lose every match, I'm wasting my time. I'm fired. So the same in Europe. If we're not competitive on the world stage, we're not going to get anywhere. But at least with the Net Zero Industrial Act and the desire to have more production in Europe, I think that's going to be getting more and more prominent. And I think we will see more manufacturing in Europe. And especially as innovation takes place. Because I was down in Australia 2-3 years ago in relation to the trade deal we were going to do with Australia and New Zealand. And one of the ventures we had was we visited Sydney University. And there we met one of the foremost researchers in solar energy. And he was showing us the different type of panels and how different panels can be far more effective in utilizing the sun. So if we can embrace innovation and make it happen in Europe, I think that's going to be a big opportunity for us.
Absolutely.
And I think we have enough power. We have enough countries involved. We have enough initiatives and opportunities to re-industrialize Europe if we really want to. And I think we do now. And I think that will make a big difference.
Absolutely. And you're right that there's important innovations in the solar modules and the solar sector that Europe can take and grab as an opportunity to re-industrialize. For example, the Netherlands, just to give one example, has landed in a dedicated funding opportunity for solar manufacturing in perovskite and tandem technology. So next generation. Yeah. Of course, at the same time, while we're happy to see some countries taking action, Germany, the Netherlands, France, we're still lacking some kind of a European response to the objectives of the Green Deal Industry Plan, the resilience, the European funding, the European Sovereignty Fund is not materializing. And to what extent is that not continuing to be a major obstacle?
Yes, funding is a big issue. I just did a webinar this morning on the Energy Performance of Buildings Directive in relation to social housing, and funding is the number probably one issue. But I think now that we have the legislation in place, and especially the signal is now given to the EIB and all the pillar banks that they have to have green mortgages. And also, I think phasing them is very important. At the moment, a lot of the grants are for a complete retrofit. That won't work. For an awful lot of people. They have to be phased. It should be planned. Do this year, solar this year maybe, do a heat pump next year, do insulation, so forth. But it would have to be a plan that you opt into. You get your funding. The grants probably need to be increased. At the moment, they're probably maximum 50%. I think increasing the grants and also engaging communities. Because you could do something collectively in the community far more economically than each individual trying to do it on their own. And of course, the one-stop shops, which are very important for us, if they worked effectively and people can go and get the information easily, then I think we'll see a lot happening, because there's no doubt about it. You're absolutely right. The will is there. Now we must turn that will into action.
Yeah, indeed. And but you're right that integrating some of these kind of different elements around the buildings, solar, heat pump, insulation, that's going to be quite important, because in the end, a lot of the magic of the energy transition lies around the building and the technology is there. If we look at the numbers, like how much households can save of combining solar with heat pumps with an EV charger, it's quite impressive. Yeah, we're talking about more than €1,000 on an annual average bill. So that integration, it seems to be quite essential.
Yeah, and I think also maybe what we possibly should do is highlight maybe individual houses or initiatives that are guaranteeing and giving huge reductions in energy costs, and highlight that and say, have these places open for people to visit, and then give them maybe a year or two max, maybe less, only 6 months, to say, if you want to be on board with this, now's your chance.
Yep.
Because if we leave it open ended, you know, something else will crop up, something else will crop up. So I think that type of thing, giving people opportunities, showing them the benefits and the advantages, but also giving a time limit. I think then people say, oh yeah, I'm going to get this done. And with the one-stop shop in particular, if the information is there, the builders are there, of course, skills is an issue as well. Once they're there, then I think you'll find an awful lot happening.
And what about social housing? Maybe that's a place where we can start already to make sure that also the more vulnerable of society are not left behind, and that we also give them access to solar powered electrified heating and all of that. Yeah, what's the picture there from your side?
Yeah, that was one of the things I discussed on the webinar early on today.
Yeah.
And it's great to see there's actually an increase in social housing retrofitting taking place in Ireland over the last number of years. And I think, again, supports and funding are vital there for information. But also I said maybe that if we could again look at a pilot project. For instance, they're talking now about doing anaerobic digesters in Ireland and saying we want to do 3 pilot projects, even though their target is 200. If they did the same, 2 or 3 pilot projects in relation to social housing in a big area and say we're doing this, put all the supports behind it, make it happen quickly, and then say, over the next number of years, we're going to do the following. I think that will have to happen.
Yep.
Otherwise, they'll be left behind and you can't have that. Because often, those who are in the most vulnerable houses are spending the highest amount of their income on energy.
Absolutely.
So we just have to help them. And it's a win-win again, because a lot of these houses maybe mightn't be as healthy as they should be. The air, etc., mightn't be as good as it should be. So making them comfortable and showing sympathy and understanding with the less well-off, I think is hugely important, and that would show the soul of Europe as well, which would be a great positive for us.
Absolutely, yeah. Well, indeed, yeah, so some of these topics like the industrial dimension, the social dimension, I'm sure it will still be with us in the coming years. The elections are approaching fast. What's your plan? Like, are you up for re-election? How are you looking forward to the next weeks and months?
I expect so. Yeah. We're having a convention soon. I expect I'll be nominated. I've been asked to go forward again. And I'm going forward probably for 2 reasons. One, because the last mandate, as I said, due to COVID, which could look, felt like half a mandate. And number 2, we have passed a pilot legislation, and I was involved in a lot of it. Now, the next mandate, for what I'm concerned, is about implementation.
Yes.
And I'd like to be there to try and influence the implementation. With the knowledge you have of seeing all the difficulties and opportunities at the same time, you could make a big contribution with the experience you have rather than starting out from scratch. So I would hope that I could continue on this, and above all, to say we have targets for 2030, targets for 2040, targets for 2050. The next 5 years, we're going to ensure that we have a plan in place to make all that happen. And that would be wonderful.
Absolutely. And that is so important. Well, thank you very much, Mr. Kelly, and best of luck with the elections. We certainly look forward and wish you all the best.
Sky's the limit. The sun is the limit. Solar energy. You have it.
Here, here. Thank you for listening to this special episode of the Shine On Policycast. Make sure to get out and use your vote at the next June elections.